When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's go.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Bingetown TV. And for the first time, I guess, our coverage. So welcome to Bingetown TV and our coverage of Percy Jackson and the Olympians. So, I mean, a lot to talk about, I would say. We're going to get into these episodes. So we're going to do episodes 1 and 2. Obviously, that's how they dropped on Disney Plus, and then we'll be weekly after this. So we have episode 1. I just love the episode title. So I accidentally vaporized my pre-algebra teacher is episode 1. And then I become Supreme Lord of the Bathroom, episode 2. So some great content. I guess probably the smartest way to do this is going to be maybe just give a little background of like our experience with the series. Mm-hmm. And then kind of that'll inform like the listeners, the audience of where we're coming from and what like this show kind of will be like. So I don't know if you would like to go first. I can go first. It doesn't really
I can matter. Go first. Yeah. So Percy Jackson is a book series that we both read. A couple of our other friends read when we were younger, and it was never Harry Potter level. Like I wasn't rereading it multiple times, but I love Greek mythology. I'm sure you do too. We always, it's just one of the coolest forms of just fiction. And Percy Jackson is the definition of that. While it is a little bit more PG than what we're used to now, this was still just exactly what I was craving when it got announced that they were going to be doing a show. I guess what's important to talk about is that we have both the book knowledge and the movie knowledge of what was made with Logan. What the fuck is his last name? Logan
Lerman, I believe.
Lerman. Yeah. Yeah. Love that guy. While the movies suck, they were also fun still. So like, I'm not going to like completely, I actually rewatched the first movie before this, just to kind of like get my head, you know, right. Because I'll be honest, like I lost most of my book knowledge. It's been over a decade. Sure. I do remember some very important plot beats that differed from the movie. So that's going to be the fun, like theory crafting, I guess, for us, which we're not going to have a lot of theories on this podcast because we have too much knowledge. I feel like it'll just be riddled with spoilers and it won't even be fun to listen to. It's going to be more of just like a fun, like reactionary sort of podcast here. And it's because of like, we know the ending of the movie and the ending of the books, kind of. I kind of remember that.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's going to lean into. I'm sure it's the books because the writer's involved. Like that's the whole idea of redoing this. So it's going to lean more into the books. But at the same time, we don't want anybody that's never been exposed to the Percy Jackson story to like listen to us and just have us ruin the ending of the whole season. We will avoid doing that. But there are going to be some moments that hopefully we're not obvious about it, like, and you can read between the lines of like what we're trying to say without saying it. So we're gonna try and like play a good middle ground. Either way, it's gonna be fun. Yeah. And these two episodes were great for me. I don't know about you. I had a great time watching these.
No, for sure, enjoyed them. I don't know how much of an ability I even have to spoil things because, like you said, I loved these books when they came out when we were younger. Mm-hmm. Obviously, like you said, not Harry Potter level, but it definitely like informed for sure like my love of reading and like especially fantasy series. And yeah, I mean, the Greek mythology stuff right up both of our alleys. We had a blast when we were fortunate enough to go to Greece in like late high school. And it was like, oh my God, look at that. Oh my God, look at that. Oh my God, look at that type of deal. So, and I've read some of the comments of people of being like, they missed this scene. They missed this scene. They missed this scene. They missed this scene. And honestly, I feel lucky that like, I don't have that laser focused memory of everything that happens. So like for me, it just felt like really cool. Like the characters, the world, like being back in it all. I had a thought of rereading the first book before watching. And then I actively chose not to do that because I thought it wouldn't help me. Honestly, it felt like it would only hurt. Like we're covering Yu Yu Hakusho. Shameless plug for another show that we're covering. And that's the same thing. Like I read that a while ago and I think I remember more big story beats from that, but it's so fun watching the show and not feeling like I'm for lack of a better term, like a slave to the details where it's like, oh, like that person's hairdo isn't the same, like that kind of stuff. So I had a fucking blast watching these episodes.
8.0 for both of these episodes on IMDb right now. So it seems like they're being received well. Everything I've been seeing online has been pretty positive. People love Walker, the main actor for Percy.
I don't know if I'm honest.
Walker Scoble.
Okay.
I don't know.
That sounds
don't check me on that spelling or the pronunciation, but he embodies Percy so well. And one thing I just want to throw out to you, because this is giving me Bran from Game of Thrones vibes, where you can tell he's like on the verge of like puberty. And his voice is already start, like you can tell like he's that age. So do you think it's going to be jarring at all? Like maybe not season two, if they're already filming that or they're about to, whatever they're doing, like he's going to grow. Like even Annabeth and Grover, like they're both that age where I feel like between
That's
seasons,
so
they could jump up real quick.
I literally didn't think about that. Was fine with Bran because while he physically looked older, he didn't talk a ton.
Right
towards the end, but obviously Percy's the main fucking character and he loves to run his mouth, so it'll be interesting for sure. I didn't even think about that, to see how he ages. But like you said, I thought he was great. Like the memory that I have of Percy, however
exactly
that may be over a decade, but I thought it was great.
A lot of the side characters were great for me as well. Like I guess we're just talking about everything now, and for those listening, like this is going to be the longest podcast of this series because it's the two episodes and every intro is always just these type of blurbs, so stick with us. Exactly. So I was just a huge fan of, I thought the mom was great. She was not the greatest in the movie. I just went back and watched it and she was like really like not the greatest. I thought the mom was fantastic in this adaptation. She was like way different. She was stronger. She felt like a girl that could have been with Poseidon. So all that worked for me. I actually surprisingly liked Dionysus, Mr. D. Mm-hmm. And I say surprising because I always forget this guy's name. I like this guy.
Jason.
Yeah, I want to say Sudeikis, but that's wrong. Yeah,
it's like Manticunis, but not.
Yeah. So he is somebody that I find absolutely hilarious. Like he was from the league. He is Jay from Big Mouth, like the voice behind Jay. Like I think this dude is hilarious, but he's also the voice of a big character in Invincible, Amazon's Invincible. Mm-hmm. And he really doesn't fit the vibe of that show, and like his because like he can like overemphasize his like comedy beats, and I felt like I was a little worried when they cast him as Dionysus, even though he does fit the Dionysus model a little bit better. But I thought his serious moments were good. Like I thought everything about him was better than I expected, so I'm happy with the choice for Mr. D so far. And then Brunner I think is great so far too. Like both of them seem like good presence in Camp Half-Blood.
I enjoyed Chiron a lot. Probably the only complaint that I have is Mr. D, and it's so minuscule for me. It just felt almost odd seeing this guy be serious.
Right. Feels That's like it's what like I'm saying. Yeah.
Not yet speaking to his strengths. But again, obviously, I'm sure these were like some of the first scenes they shot. You're kind of getting into your own character. And obviously, there's a lot more to come from him. So
the god of drinking, like that partying, that makes sense for him, at least. Like that's the best way to cast him for that. But anyway, that was just like a little ramble of first thoughts. I did think that there was some weird cinematography scene transitions. I don't know. Anytime it was like the dream scene, it just felt like we were in the middle of a scene and it kind of ended and it was just black. And then we're just like in the dream sequences. Both times that felt a little weird, but that's like a stupid nitpick that didn't take even 1% of my enjoyment out. It's just something I wrote down, but those were like the big beats. I'm ready to kind of talk about the show if you are, because it was really fun. And overall I'm happy where we're at. And, So are you ready? Do you want to say anything else?
Yes, sir. No, I'm good.
Okay. So we are going to do this quicker, because if you've seen any Percy Jackson in the past, like this is kind of just like overkilling it a little bit, but we're going to bring up all of our favorite parts. So the beginning was so quick and like fast paced because it kind of just got the bullshit out of the way. I don't want to say cold opening, but like this was just Percy getting like that over voice, like talking about the warnings of Half-Bloods, all that. Yeah, exactly. And then we get like the glimpses in his past of the blending between Greek mythology and reality. Like we see a couple things. We'll bring up whatever we want there. But I just want to open the floor all the way through the Greek museum scenes, including Miss Dodds turning into, say, gargoyle, or is she like a...
She's a fury, I think, technically.
Fury, okay. Yeah.
It's not
fury
a heartbeat. Of, like, I think she's a fury.
Fury, they're Hades, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, so they're from the underworld or whatever.
And I'm also just saying that's correct. It could be incorrect, but to
it
me,
could
that's
be incorrect.
Correct.
But I'm pretty sure the Furies, because the way that Miss Dodds talked implied like we've been looking for you.
That's true.
And at the end of episode two, they kind of make it like Hades.
Yeah, that's
has
a good
been
point.
Orchestrating some of this stuff. So I think that's it. But we could talk about all of that all the way up until Mr. Grover and Mr. Bruner and Grover just like kind of like save him, or like he like comes to after fighting Miss Dodds. So
the episode opened and I just immediately had a smile on my face, especially like when he's seeing the things where the mist is kind of, I don't want to say like going away, but like he's seeing through the mist a little bit. And I especially when the letters like on the paper started changing, I just was like, okay, like we're getting into it, like, you know, something's gonna happen type of deal. And I just love how well they did the relationship with his mom. It starts here where he has like that kind of flashback scene. They talk about like why he's named Perseus or Percy. And yeah, I mean, and like you're saying too, with Miss Dodds, like the CGI looked great.
Like I said that last night to you when we were hanging out, and I was mind blown at how good that looks. Like top dollar budget to me. Like, I don't think you could. She's like looking at Percy by the fountain and she just starts walking. The camera pans away and goes back and she just looks so badass.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, this is awesome. She did get taken out a little easy, but that's kind of how it happens.
Yeah. And now that you say that too, maybe another nitpick slash complaint I have is the first episode is 38 minutes, maybe.
Short.
Like total runtime. So 39 minutes, I think, including like the credit scene, which just feels crazy. Like they could have added scenes. Obviously they cut things. I couldn't tell you off the top of my head like what they should have kept in. But yeah, it just felt like it just kind of flew by. Maybe nowadays that's kind of the directive, is you got to make the pilot. It's got to hit because you need people to click through to episode two. I know that metric, at least for Netflix potentially, is like really good. So maybe that's just the way it is. But I thought it was a great opening to the show. I feel like if you didn't watch Percy Jackson, like you were interested immediately anyway.
Yeah. And I think it was just like a natural stopping point, and there was probably no way around it. Like once you hit Camp Half-Blood, that had to be the end of the episode.
Yeah.
And they probably didn't want to just throw extra scenes in it, maybe spend the time and money other spots. So that's all I can really say to justify it. But of course, we have to bring up Bruner, aka Kyren, gives the pen sword to Percy, and that's what he uses to kill Miss Dodds, or I don't know, kill, whatever. That's going to be an iconic, what they say, a mighty instrument for the rest of the series. So that's just something that I smile when I see stuff like that.
Exactly. That's the fun part for us, is like the little things like that that we remember, and especially remember so fondly, and like it popping up. It's like, oh, there it is.
Mm-hmm.
Just checking off one of those boxes. Yeah.
After the museum scene, they're all, like Percy and Grover get in trouble because of the whole pushing the girl into the fountain or whatever it is. And then, you know, Grover betrays him. Fake little betrayal.
Yeah.
And he gets expelled. And then we get our introduction to Percy's mom's boyfriend, husband, I don't know, his step, whatever. His name is Gabe, I think.
Yeah,
Gabe. And I don't know if this is a complaint, but I feel like he wasn't like nearly as bad as he's portrayed in both the movie and the books.
Like he just seemed like a goober.
Yeah, and what did he have, a Zach Wilson jersey on his
face? Yeah, that was funny. That was funny.
I was looking up, like, who is number two? I couldn't tell if it was Jets. It looked green. I was like, it's probably a Jets. But who the hell has a Zach Wilson jersey?
In my head canon is that it's just like an aesthetic way to show that he's a loser.
Yeah.
Because like, who the fuck would frame a Zach Wilson jersey?
How is he in this show? That makes no sense.
It's so funny. If I was Zach Wilson, I'd be like, fuck yeah, bro. Look at that.
Yeah, I mean, that's hell sick. Yeah.
Yeah, but that was good. I thought this was a good scene portraying Percy's characteristics, just like the verbal sparring. He's just a little motherfucker, and it's just funny to watch it happen live here. Obviously he's on edge. And then a complaint I did see online, which I didn't think about in the moment, but now that I think about it, is like funny to me, is her just like sitting, his mom being her just sitting in the rain on the balcony, and it was like, what is she doing out there? People said that, and now that I'm saying this out loud, I feel like it feels obvious that it's
is it not
Poseidon.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I literally wrote that note. I was like, that's kind of like a cool touch, and because the Poseidon reveals at the end of episode two, we're going to openly talk about that. That's just obvious, like he's Percy Jackson, he's the son of Poseidon. So but I think that's what it was.
Another nitpick I saw was people being like, in the book she makes bean dip, in this she's like buying sandwiches. What are we doing here? Like, come on. That's just like the wrong way to go about it. Like Wheel Time as an example. I know a lot of those details, and like for sure I'm susceptible to be like, oh, they didn't do this small detail that I care about and that I liked, but it's just, I don't know. I think you're just like actively getting in your own way at that point.
Yeah, it's hard to enjoy anything when you take it that nitpicky.
Yeah. So for me, these scenes, interactions were as good as I could have hoped for.
We're just lumping in the whole beach scenes too, because, well, I guess we'll talk about that now. Like after the mom decides we're going to go to the beach where she met Poseidon and all that stuff, We have that first like weird dream transition that I talked about. We'll talk about that because mm-hmm. that one is actually something I think we can kind of guess on because we don't know the answer necessarily, or if we do, I don't remember it, but we'll talk about that scene. And then the initial info dump from the mom to Percy, and then Grover shows up and like the Seder reveal happens. So everything before they leave and jump into the car to go to Camp Half-Blood, we can just talk about. And I'll start it off just by saying the transition dream, the way the wording was of the warnings, the second scene that we get in episode 2 with the voice seems like it's like mm-hmm. tempting Percy to get justice, like in a specific way. So I don't know if I'm trying to manipulate him or whatever. I can't tell if we're supposed to think it's just Hades. Like, is that what we're supposed to just...
That was my, like, gut check interpretation of it. That's what it felt like to me. But again, that could be... Is it that's the way it is in the movies? Because the movies changed it, didn't they?
They changed it. They changed a lot of that, like, yeah. this higher level stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Yeah, I don't remember, I guess, exactly how it was in the movies. And then that obviously, I think, taints the way I think about the books. But my like, gut check, again, being... I 100% forgotten a lot of details. It feels like it's Hades.
I wish I wrote more of the quotes down, but it felt like when he was talking, it was implied that the person didn't like gods, but I couldn't tell if it was coming from like a jealous god or if it was coming mm-hmm. from a non-god saying like, we got to get fucking revenge on the gods. Like I couldn't tell based on the wording.
That would be an interesting seed plant for the future. Right. Yeah. That's a good point.
So... Who knows?
That's a detail that I do remember there.
Yeah. So they can change all of that. Like they can do whatever they want because of red herrings and then like, you know, taking and improving upon the movie of what it took from the book. So they can do whatever they want. So it's kind of a guess. We don't really have an answer here, but I'm leaning, I guess, a non-god. I don't really fucking know. Because if you're not a god, how do you send those type of messages? Like that feels
that's
like a
actually
god
another
thing.
Fantastic point. And something we haven't mentioned yet is the fact that Rick Riordan?
Yeah.
Is very involved in this. That could be, maybe this isn't the best way to think about it, but I feel like I am coming at this with a greater level of like understanding or maybe like leeway. If there's things, like I feel like he's signing off on changes. And
for sure.
To be honest, there's literally no one that knows the story better than him.
Yeah.
Like it's not physically possible, I would say, to know the story better than him. So if there's people that have qualms and are worried, I think, about things, I just feel like that's, again, maybe not the best way to go about it, especially because we've seen 2 episodes. Do you know how many are in this season?
I think it's 8.
Okay. So there's, we just have a journey ahead of us. So we'll see. We've experienced shows off of like content that we love where like they just cut and move things around. Just the storytelling mm-hmm. works in a different way with TV shows. So I guess that's and again, that's a nice mystery for us, I guess, at this point.
I like that mystery seed plant too. That's something that seems like it's going to be a recurring theme. But in terms of the beach house, I guess, before Grover shows up, there was some really good conversation between Percy and his mom about like the whole Greek mythology, it all being real and stuff. And I thought it was hilarious when she says like, your dad's a god. And he goes like, Jesus? Like, I was like, that was
so like, not God.
Funny.
Oh, yeah, God. Yeah, yeah. That was really funny.
Like you.
I also like the, God? when she's like, do you know why we always go to this cabin? And he's like, because it's close to the septic tank. That literally made me laugh out loud. And I was like, okay, we're in good hands. Like, I'm going to laugh. There's also a part in episode two that made me crack up. And I was like, okay, this is good.
Yeah. How are we feeling about Grover so far?
I personally like him.
I feel like we haven't gotten enough yet to really have an opinion.
Yeah. I think they're doing this, like, him questioning himself, like, feeling the level of the burden, not knowing if he's good enough, if he can like rise to the occasion type mm-hmm. of like character. And I think that just is going well. Like it's coming across the screen to me, which I think is a good place for his character to be at. Is it like a perfect personification of him from the books? Probably not. I don't like exactly remember a ton, but I don't know. I think that he's playing like this goofy sidekick plus what I just said part well.
I am going to reserve my opinion until we get a little bit more, but so far, I mean, like nothing to complain about, I guess. I like that he's 24. That's hilarious.
That was funny. And it was good too, of like he comes in and he's talking and first he's just like looking at his legs. And he's not really hearing the conversation they're having. He's literally just looking at his legs. And he goes, he's like, why is there a goat's legs in your shorts? It was good.
Yeah, the movie reveal, like, they way more, like, emphasize, like, the shock. And this one, they just said, like, this is happening. We're just going to roll with catch up, basically.
Yeah. It's like Grover. Why is Grover here?
So I guess we'll just continue on with this storyline. And if you don't have anything else to say, because it's just them deciding, like, okay, game time. Grover's mission is to get Percy to safety. So they have to bring him to Camp Half-Blood. And we have the whole car scene. I guess we could just talk about the rest of the episode, just because it's, you know, it's the car scene, the Minotaur showing up to Camp Half-Blood, all of that. So this is like the whole sprint of the last 15 minutes of the episode, 10 minutes of the episode.
You want to talk about CGI and good effects. Fucking Minotaur was awesome.
Yes, he was. It was great.
Awesome. I was genuinely blown away. I was like, I didn't think we were going to get this level of quality.
Yeah. His biceps, dude, they were like balloons.
It was fucking cool, man. And also, it makes me like really excited for the rest of all these episodes. Like, we're going to get so much cool stuff.
Yeah, like the best versions of any sort of Greek gods or like myths ever shown on TV. Like, that's probably what we're getting, looks wise at least. Because Missed Odds, the Minotaur, that's just this episode of what were amazing. Mm-hmm. Even like the flashes in the beginning of what you saw through the mist, like everything looked so good.
Yeah, it looked really good. The one thing that didn't hit for me, and maybe it was, again, is it supposed to add a levity to the moment? I'm not really sure, but when she's like, excuse me, I'm not rodeoing, when she's like doing the ole with the red jacket. I mean, I get it. This looks dumb. She went out like a boss.
Right, and they did that the same way as like the movie. She like disappears, and we find out in the next episode she's like been taken to the underworld. So I do like that. And I thought that they handled, between this episode and the beginning of next episode, they handled Percy's grief better than they did in the movie by a mile. Like in the movie, he just like, oh, mom's dead, and then just like kind of moves on. This one, at least he has a multiple scenes of grieving a little bit about it, and he's definitely so they did it a little, like, that part a lot better.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, this episode, like we said, is short, but I feel like they really nailed, they did a good job of explaining his relationship with his mom, like why they're so close, like her personality. You can see like, that she's so strong, it rubs off on him a little bit. It just, I thought it was good. And like you said, you definitely feel the impact, even though we've been, you know, we're maybe 30 minutes into the season, like you feel the impact of her like disappearing in front of his eyes.
And then it causes his whole rage moment and the charge. And I thought that was pretty epic. I thought I don't know how old he is in real life, I forget, but he definitely like handled that killing scene really. It was cool. It was really cool to see like him jumping around and like taking the freaking horn and stabbing.
He's getting active.
Like,
early.
Oh, that was awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. Percy's the fucking man.
I guess there's not really anything else to bring up there besides him waking up and seeing Annabeth for a second, who's been watching him, and then falls back asleep, wakes back up, and it's the Chiron reveal. And I don't know if you know, I was driving myself crazy trying to remember what the name of, like, why Chiron sounds so familiar besides him, and it's another Greek character. I don't want to say god, because it's Charon, like instead of an I, it's an A. Charon. I don't know how it's pronounced. It's the ferryman of the underworld.
Oh,
so it's like one letter off, and it always throws me off because I always mix them up. And I played the game Hades, and he's like a big part of that. So it's a great game, fantastic game.
Yeah. The only comment I'll say is I feel like I had a smile on my face the entire time I watched this first episode.
Yeah,
and like it ended, and I was like, yeah, fuck yeah.
Too quick, like, but it was great.
Yeah, too quick. Well, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. That we felt like I want more.
Yeah,
I'm a fan. I think of the 2-episode initial drop, like 2 to 3 episode initial drop, and then weekly.
I think that's what it'll
like,
be.
I think that hits like a very nice sweet spot of like the craving of the content versus like being able to like enjoy it.
I think it's good because the Hulu A Murder at the End of the World did the same exact thing. I just think it jumpstarts you, keeps the audience more like engaged. So I think it's a good idea.
I just like the weekly chats about it.
Yeah.
Like everyone's at the same point essentially for the most part.
Yeah.
Or instead of like a Netflix show drops and, you know, you're on episode 8 and I'm on episode 3.
It's going to be weird, though, because I do think that this is going to be a unique community where everybody knows so much. That's like the same thing with Wheel of Time, but like this is different in the sense where like it has both the movie and the books to pull from. And like people hate the movies because of how bad they did. So like the diehard, you know, book purists are going to be extra critical. So it does feel like it's fighting an uphill battle, but so far so good. And like even through 2 episodes, like I know it's early, but like all the reviews, like I said earlier, were very positive. And You can kind of see why. Like, it just feels like it has love in this shit. Yeah, it's exactly. Made with care.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. That's a really good point. I'm also interested. I don't think you could ever get a statistic on it, but like the amount of people that are watching the show that have never like seen the movies or read the books.
Yeah. Like how many completely new audience members are there that are being pulled in? I don't know. I think this is one of those rare cases where it's probably like very low compared to most shows. Like,
Hopefully it's a lot of like young kids. You know, who like the age that we were when we were reading the books, like hopefully this kid's gets that age are like getting into it for the first time. That would be fun. That would be a fantastic outcome of them making this show, because this series is great.
Did you see him Walker's comments about if Percy Jackson were to fight Harry Potter?
No, I didn't.
He was just like, I always like thought about that, like if they were to fight, but it wouldn't even be close. Percy would fucking kill Harry Potter.
Good on you.
It might be true if he can block some of the magic. Like, who knows? Yeah.
He's good on you. Good on you.
He's going to grow to become a very badass Greek legend, hopefully. So let's keep going through here. Because the second episode, I Become Supreme Lord of the Bathroom, continues directly.
The legend's growing.
Yeah, exactly. He's starting to get that glory, baby.
Yeah, baby.
it just like continues directly on. Like, he's still waking up. And then we finally have a talk. Like, Grover gets a little bit real with him. And. This is the grieving scene I was mentioning earlier. So we can talk about anything here into actually meeting Dionysus, Mr. D. And we can even lump in just Chiron giving him the lay of the land and like showing him the cabin. So basically that whole beginning part, that's I just mentioned a lot of scenes there, but however we want to tackle it, we can start talking about whatever. Cause I think we covered the grief part. If you want to just, I don't know, whatever you want to bring up.
The introduction to Mr. D was, again, the first time that I had like a, not necessarily a worry. I don't think it escalated to a worry of just, like I'm clocking that, like, I know this actor.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about the fact that I know this actor and I'm thinking about the way that he's acting, you know, versus like everyone else in the show feels like it's just like they're the character. The first time you met him, it's just a little early for his character specifically. And I'm really into Chiron and I think that the camp's fucking awesome. And not, I was like, okay, I don't care about these scenes. Because it was funny when he's like, yeah, I could be your dad, basically. And Percy believes him.
Yes, son. Yes, Peter. It's like, Percy.
That was good. I enjoyed that. But I was like, really like, okay, I want to see the camp. 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 So I liked a lot of the camp scenes.
The cabins look great. We find out there's 12 cabins for each of the 12 Olympians. I think Chiron's starting to give that speech about the claiming of like gods grabbing their children and saying like, that's my kid. But for the time being, the Hermes, the god of travelers, and the house of the unclaimed is what Chiron goes on to say. This is where you go until you're claimed, or if you're the son of Hermes, which we get our first introduction to our next named character, Luke. He shows up and he confirms, I forget if it's in this scene or the next one, but he actually is a son of Hermes. So he's not unclaimed, but he's like just a badass sword fighter. I think they said he's the best fighter, but
he's the best in.
He's the best swordsman. Right?
Yeah, he's the best swordsman in camp. And then he later on says that Annabeth's the best warrior.
The best warrior. Okay, yeah. So he's like the Mihawk and she's like the Shanks. I don't know. Does that work?
I rock with that. Yeah. I can get behind
it kinda
that.
Works, right?
I get behind that. It's probably a little bit too much respect on Luke's name, but it's
that's
okay.
That's true.
That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that.
I think, loved his introduction, man. I thought he was fantastic. Yeah. So
they did
far.
A good job, of establishing him and Percy's relationship. Mm-hmm. And I think if you haven't seen the movies or read the books, like, you're definitely thinking like, okay, I like Luke. Like, I like this character. This guy's interesting. He's got the scar.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe he's more like Zorro.
Yeah, I guess. Count it.
Yeah, exactly. And I liked Percy being like apologizing to Chiron for losing the pen. And he's like, you didn't lose the pen.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, no, it was on the hillside. Yeah, it's right there. I was like, fuck yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Never.
And I skipped over this too, but I wanted to bring this up. I thought it was important, I guess, world building wise, that Chiron does say that anything that gods are forbidden, they have rules whenever Zeus or whoever sets the god rules.
Yeah.
There are ways to circumnavigate the rules, and that's using demigods, which was the whole point of him, of Mr. D asking Percy to go get the alcohol for him, because he's not allowed to go get the alcohol, but if he can get a demigod to do it, he's allowed. So I really like that. I like that they emphasize that, because that just is like the basis of the majority of this series, and like anything with Greek gods is always about how the gods are manipulating the mortals or the demigods into doing things for them. So that was a nice touch, because I don't remember them saying or making that an important plot point from the movie.
Yeah, and that's an interesting way to do it too. It feels very like casual and not that important, because it's just like going fetching wine, but like you're saying, it that concept is like the foundation of a lot of plot moving forward. Yes, but like if you're not familiar with the series and everything, you're just like, okay, it feels like not necessarily a throwaway, but it feels like it's there for a joke versus like actually being an insane plot mover.
Okay. So to move us a little bit forward, we are going to have a big scene here where Kyren and Bruner talk with Grover about some high level Percy stuff. But before that, like we have this weird scene, which I don't have much commentary on. I'm a little curious about your take on it. When Grover's walking to meet Bruner and Kyren, or Kyren and Mr. D, sorry, I might have messed that up already twice, but he has like this moment with like a, I think it's a dryad, like a druid of the forest, like a, you know, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Looks amazing. Again, really good. I don't know what that was. It was more just, I guess what you were saying, trying to instill confidence in him, but I don't know what his connection, like what that is.
That literally, when I was watching this scene, I was thinking, do I not remember that this chick is like his mom or something? Like,
yeah,
it felt like that. It felt like a motherly type of interaction. And I was like, okay, this must be a detail I forgot. But I guess, yeah, if you're also kind of in the same boat, I'm curious to what the answer actually is.
Okay, here's an article right here about who is the woman, who's the tree woman that Grover spoke to.
Okay,
that was not in the book. So like this whole thing is new. Dryads are wood nymphs, spirits that live in the forest, and sometimes, like in Helena's case, who's this character, inside the trees. They're going to have a part to play in one of the later books / movies / seasons. Mm-hmm. Like that's a thing. But this character is definitely new. And I guess there's nothing really to talk about them because like this is... Yeah. Like this is just new material. Like I don't know how it's going to play a bigger role, but it's new.
I guess a subtle seed plant.
Excuse more Grover characterization,
nature
I guess.
Reference. Yeah, yeah. And I think that's perfectly fine. And like you said, we didn't get a ton of Grover in these two episodes, so I think that's fine to give us more to his character.
Yeah, and then he just goes and talks with the two homies about not letting Percy know some of the secrets that they know, especially with like Hades probably being the lightning thief and having the mom, like that's all talked about here, which comes up later again, but they're trying to keep Percy in the dark because this is just how things, like he has to learn on his own time and things will, you know, present themselves when it has to happen. So anything else you wanted to bring up there?
No, I just think connecting that scene, this initial conversation with what happens at the end, just funny that in here they're like, you absolutely cannot tell him. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, he just like steps in and just tells him.
And it works. They didn't really try
to stop him. I think they low key like, maybe the way I'm reading it is that they kind of low key like thought it was good to tell him in this sense to like give him that extra level of motivation.
Right.
Because they were pretty much begging him to go. And he was like, I don't want to go.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So they were like, no, stop. Don't tell him. That's what it felt like to me, at least.
Okay. So now is a fun couple of scenes. We have, first the second dream transition scene that's tempting Percy, like saying like, we need to get justice against the gods. That's more of the reason I guess I'm coming at it. Like maybe it's not a god because of the way it's phrased here, but we kind of had that conversation already. So the fun scenes that I'm talking about though here are some more info dumps from Luke, like, and how demigods like fit into this world. Like how I like how he phrased it. He's like, we process reality differently. This is like some of the Easter eggs that link back. They didn't explicitly say the whole dyslexia thing that you mentioned earlier, which they do in the movie and the books, but it is like he can read Greek writing just naturally. And like, that's part of it. So like they lay some of the groundwork there. Then he talks about the different cabins and saying how the glory thing, which was fucking awesome. It's basically like building up your resume as like a Greek.
Yeah, you get your feats.
Warrior. Yeah, it's such a cool idea. I love the idea.
Yeah, it's badass. So scenes like this could run the risk of being like way too smacking you over the head while they're literally just dumping all this info on us. But I feel like it still worked really well with the process of him like showing him the camp. Like we're kind of learning alongside Percy, which it didn't feel like clunky or like over the top obvious that it's just like exposition type of deal. And I also just, I mean, again, Percy's the fucking man where he's like, okay, so like I just get glory and then my dad will recognize me. Like, all right, where do we start?
Yeah, exactly.
Just immediately, like, yeah, let's get active. Like, where are we going? How do we get glory?
We meet Clarice too. She's a daughter of Ares, the god of war. So that's just naturally fits with like the mentality of what you would be if your dad was the god of war. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about her more later. Like, let's go get glory. We got to find out what you're good at. And I like that they did a couple of the, like they went around to a couple of the gods setups, I guess, just to find out what his skills were. And like, he sucked at archery, which is Artemis, I think.
Yes, that sounds right. There's a Demeter. And then it's gotta be Artemis.
Yeah, it's Artemis.
Same thing.
No, Demeter's nature, right? And then yeah, and then he goes over to the metal forging, like, to see if he has that in him. I forget that god's name. Jesus.
Hephaestus.
Yeah, that sounds right too. Fails at that. They're both terrible failures. Like, he can't shoot a bow to save his life. Yeah.
I like how he denies the fire. He goes, I wouldn't. Yeah,
like, it was kills people, just like falls and like shoots it.
Oh man, he's great.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, and then I guess he learns about the prayer thing too here, which might come back into play because he uses it to try and talk to his mom, where if you burn something that you really care about, gods tend to listen. Then he immediately goes to tries to talk to his mom, which I thought was weird. Thought he was gonna try and talk to his dad, but
yeah, that's definitely where it felt like it was heading.
Yeah.
I think that Percy as a character is being brought to life in a great way. Like, just the comments that he makes, it's just so funny. They're all so good. Of like the gods like burnt mac and cheese. Like, it was just fucking funny. And he has a realistic reaction to everything. I feel like I would say the same thing of like, I really have to fucking go burn this mac and cheese now. Like, what the fuck?
Talk about details of the book. Don't they only do ambrosia and like...
I think so.
Whatever the nectar that gods...
That's what that is.
Oh yeah, because it was just ambrosia is what they're supposed to be, like the best tasting thing of all time. Like yeah, so I guess they got mac and cheese in this universe.
Yeah, mac and cheese this time. That's funny.
All right, before we get to the big climax of the capture the flag stuff, we just have that scene where the name of the episode came from, right? Like, we have the whole him using the water magic for the first time and defending himself against Clarice, who is just
Clarice.
Like a cartoonishly evil bitch. Yeah. Like, I don't even know what to say. I do actually feel I remember spurts of her in the books, kind of. Like, I feel like she was one of the characters that they kind of cut from the movie.
Yeah.
Versus them bringing her to life here a little bit more. She might have been in the movie. I really don't remember. I don't even think they emphasized it that much. But yeah, so I like that daughter of Ares and like the Ares cat is playing a bigger part.
Yeah, I was gonna say it doesn't seem like she's like really out of place, or that her, I don't even know the right way to say it, but like that she's like a caricature of a character. The things that she's doing feel like they make sense with like what they've told us about her character, I guess.
And the glory thing is kind of like great writing out for everything. It's like the leaders of this camp probably want people like this to forge stronger demigods. Like, this isn't like a, so it's, you know, people are just going to clash and
she's a fucking hater though.
She is a total hater.
Yeah. Complete hater. Maybe they don't want haters, but it's nice to, like, you know, she's competitive in that way.
I like her reasoning.
Not healthy, but
not that I like her reasoning, but I like that she's not actually just trying to murder Percy, just like in cold blood. That's what I like that they clarified. She's like, I'm not trying to kill you. I just want you to just admit that you're a fraud. And that plays a little nicer. Yeah.
Which he's not a fraud. Percy Jackson's never been a fraud, never a day in his life. And this is our actual introduction to Annabeth, right?
Yeah, it is. So this is them talking. Like, she's been watching him this whole time, and he even says, like, are you stalking me? She's like, yeah, I am. So that
I
is
love
this whole
the way she answered a bunch of questions in this episode. It was funny. Where, like, you can tell isn't expecting her to just be like, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then add no context after it. He's just, like, waiting for more. It was funny. But that it came across really well.
And she's the daughter of Athena. If that wasn't this scene, it's the next scene that we find out about. So that's why Luke has so much respect for her. And like, we do find out about their backstory next as well. But she is just like a very analytical, strategic minded person, which makes sense being the daughter of Athena.
Yeah.
She seems to have some sort of connection to her mother, though, because Athena gave her the cap of invisibility that she like kind of dons a little bit later in this. I guess we're just talking about this whole thing, like the whole capture the flag moment, which is just like a mock war. Oh,
I loved it.
Yeah, it was great.
I thought it was awesome when they're all like dressed up, and I literally gave us the first shot of it where they're like all on opposite sides of the little, I guess, creek bed, maybe you could say. This looks so fucking cool. I remember reading the books being like, I want to be there. You know, like, I want to go to Camp Half-Blood. And this, like, I felt like gave that feeling. I was like, I want to fucking go and, like, play this game.
Key difference from the movie, though, because Annabeth's on Percy's team this time versus him, versus our girl Alexandria Daddario kicking some Percy ass against him.
Yeah, I couldn't tell almost at first. I was like, are they putting him on the other team? And then I was like, okay, never mind.
Right, because she had that weird comment. She's like, I want to know if you can help me win Capture the Flag. And I was like, wait, aren't you guys going to fight? Like, I guess I just I don't know. I conflated it with the movie and stuff, but I want to bring up the backstory because I thought it did a lot for their characters, or at least this was one of my book moments where I felt pretty happy just to hear Luke just break down the whole how he met Annabeth, and like there's him traveling with Thalia, and Thalia was the first child born of one of the big three Greek gods that broke this whole pact that they had. Luke says that she didn't make it, but Annabeth did make it to the camp with Luke, which is why they have such a bond. Because they're like family. They got here together. They went through hardship together. They lost one of their friends together. So that was like a good building moment for both of their characters.
At first, I was thrown off when he was like, she's my little sister.
Yeah.
I was like, wait a second, what? But I guess he meant it obviously more like metaphorically or like emotionally. Sure. Yeah, versus like actual blood relation. Yeah, I thought this was a good, I don't want to say turning point for Luke's character, but I feel like it added like really good depth. I thought the actor did well in this scene. The combat, I mentioned that a scene in episode 2 cracked me up. Right before I get there, when Luke takes his company, he's like, company out. Again, I'm just like, fuck, I want to fucking join. It's like the paintball game in Assassination Classroom.
Yeah.
It was like I want to be there. Like, I want to like participate for sure. And
LARPing.
I literally laughed so hard out loud when they split up, whatever, and like Annabeth leaves Percy, where he's like saying to her, like, you know, I need this. And she just puts on the cap of invisibility and dips out, basically. And Luke is talking to his friend, whose name I do not remember. And after they win a battle or whatever, and then he's like, okay, like, we got to do XXX. And Luke's like, no, like, you know, Annabeth's got a plan, like Percy, he'll show up when we need him to. And then it just goes to him flossing on the fucking mountaintop. I literally laughed so hard.
And Adam's watching all this stuff too. He's just like laying on the freaking on the tree. Like,
oh my God.
I was like, you just made a big deal about having to like win some glory and you're just sitting here like doing nothing.
Just which I thought hitting was hilarious. The shit out of that floss though. That was so funny. That cracked me the fuck up. But then he does come through. He does come through.
He does.
I thought the choreography fighting looked really good.
Clarice, being that asshole that she is, comes in and starts messing with him. I had to rewind because I was like also taking notes while watching it when he breaks her spear, her magical item, and she like freaks out. I thought she was just freaking out because he like lost. I like looked away for like a split second. I was like, why is she screaming? Yeah. And I saw that he broke the Ares spear.
Yeah.
I'd be fucking pissed, dude.
Oh imagine my God, I'd be devastated.
That thing was so cool. Yeah.
That thing was
just
sick.
Like lit up. It was so cool.
Well, I mean, it's a combo of her like being embarrassed, losing the game, and losing the spear. Like Clarice is so down, has never probably been down worse.
Exactly. So she knows he's not a fraud anymore because he ain't a fraud.
Yeah, this is like worst case scenario for her, which is fine. Yeah, well, fuck Clarice.
I'm happy I don't remember where her storyline goes. If it goes anywhere past like this initial bullying, like it might. She is just someone I have a complete blank spot for. So keep an eye on this girl because who knows? She seems ripe for a redemption arc.
Yeah,
eventually,
for sure. Yeah, it felt good to watch her get her just desserts, but I think it would be interesting to get some character growth out of her. Although it's kind of, I mean, I guess we'll see where it goes.
Yeah. And I got some mad chills at the end here when it happens, and Annabeth takes the invisibility cap off, pushes Percy into the water just to see, and he heals himself with the water. I don't know how he has like the knowledge of Minotaurs and like he saw Pegasi as a kid. Like he knows things, but he doesn't think that when he shoots water out, like he's not instantly Poseidon. Like, how do you not? Like, if I'm fucking like, if you bring me into this world and I like touch a outlet by accident, I get like electric shock coming out of my hand. I'm like, dude, I'm probably Zeus's kid. That's my first fucking thought. Like, that's how do you not think water? I don't know.
He's just a baby.
That's true. But it seems like he has some Greek mythology knowledge.
Oh, no. Yeah, I didn't think about it, but that does seem kind of correct.
Maybe so
it was
just obvious.
Annabeth being a stalker was immediately after it, so I think he might have been more concerned for his like immediate personal safety. How about that?
It's true. And she knew, though, at this point, clearly. Yeah. Like, she was just trying to prove it to everybody. And I thought that was just awesome, though, when the trident just pops up and it's just like pointing to him. It looked like a video game. It's just like,
quest I also marker. Just love the fact, like, in the story itself, just the story beat that he's the son of Poseidon feels like a little bit of a curveball, because you'd think like classic, like story like this main character, like he would just be like the son of Zeus, but like that he's the son of Poseidon.
Son of Hades would be an interesting one too, which is why that game Hades exists.
There you go. Someone took it in their own hands.
Yeah, and it's a freaking great story. I think that one would have won Game of the Year that year. But anyway, after the claiming of Percy by Poseidon, we have our final scene. And this is just, we've been dancing around it a little bit already, but you brought up mm-hmm. the Grover mom drop, like that she's still alive and is with Hades. But basically, Mr. D and Chiron are just saying, yo, this is your quest. This is what needs to happen. They drop a lot of like the main plot of this season right now, which in the movies it happens like in the first scene, like you see the Zeus and Poseidon conversation as the opening of the movies, and in this we get it right now. Like, we were building up to this point where we find out that Zeus's master bolt was stolen and there's going to be a war among the gods in a week if the lightning thief doesn't give back the bolt. And right now the number one suspect is Percy from Zeus's perspective, because he's the only living kid of the big three gods, and he just came out of nowhere. Poseidon just claimed him, so he's kind of thinking this
is like
the game of like they're making moves here, basically. Yeah,
it's just so funny to think about that Zeus is like pissed off, like, where the fuck's my bolt? And then Poseidon claims Percy, and he's immediately like, okay, it was that motherfucker.
Yeah,
it's just like so funny to think about that thought process. And I got Percy's like, me? What the fuck? Yeah, he's like, I literally just got here.
Yeah,
I just got here.
It's Ned Stark as Zeus in the movie. It's great.
Yeah, that's actually a fantastic point.
He's like, give me my bolt, Poseidon.
Yeah, shout out Sean Bean. I think it works better this way.
I do too.
I like this, and especially it works well with the fact that they dropped these two episodes. So it's kind of like, you could even say it's like one episode. It's like one big pilot episode almost. Mm-hmm. I think that it just, the storytelling works way better this way.
And they did hint at it, if you were really paying attention, because of the way Miss Dodds talks about it, like, give it back. Mm. We've been looking for you. Give it back. Yeah, like, that's
good point.
You know, if you don't know, you don't know. But now, like, looking back, it was a little bit there, but that's going to be the plot for the whole rest of the season. So we got six more, two down. They were fun, man. Like, I'm really excited. Yeah. And what day did these drop again? Are these,
I want to say
Wednesdays?
Wednesday.
Yeah. I think these might be Wednesdays.
It dropped on the 20th, I think. So that was a Wednesday.
Yeah.
There you go. It'll be Wednesdays.
Cool. This one's going to be a little bit late, obviously, because of Christmas. So if you're hearing this, you're probably on the other side of the holidays, or maybe it's, I don't know, the day Christmas. Who knows if we're lucky enough to edit it and get it out by then. But it's been a blast. I'm ready to just freaking keep running through. This was probably going to be a longer one. Maybe the next one, since it'll only be singular episodes, we'll be able to focus on some of the more detailed parts of it. But mm-hmm. I don't know. I feel like we had a good pace. This was fun. And I can't wait to see more, man.
I think, just to reiterate, I'm like, I loved these two episodes.
Yeah.
Like, I'm excited for each episode to come out now. Like, I really can't wait. It's just fun.
Hard recommendation to everybody. Yeah. Like, I'll say, watch this show. Like, just watch it. It's good.
Yeah, for sure. And that just feels great. Mm-hmm. Feels fantastic. Especially nowadays, it's such a fucking crapshoot. If content and like an established story that you like know and like is getting an adaptation made, it's such a crapshoot of whether you're going to like it or not. And it just felt like, again, I wasn't like putting a ton of expectation on this. Like, if this flopped, I mean, would I be disappointed? Yes. Would I be like emotionally devastated? Not like a ton, type of deal. But it still felt like great that I came away with a huge smile after these two episodes. So I'm just pumped.
Yeah. I got no complaints from my side. It seems like we talked to our one friend who was also a book reader back in the day. He's a little bit more of a book purist, so he had some nitpicks, but overall he was even happy, and he's harder to please too.
Yeah.
So everybody I know that has seen it, which is a sample size of four, I think, 100%.
Who's the fourth?
I thought Dave watched the first episode.
Oh, okay. But is Dave going to join us?
He was going to, but he's traveling right now for the holidays. Yeah. So he's going forward. I think he said he would be down, but he's also going to be like the side host, like do much less, just like watch it and then jump on.
Yeah.
So we might have three hosts going forward either way. Yeah.
And he's like a complete rook.
Well, like, right? He saw the movies. Yeah. Oh, he may have read a book or two, but he definitely. Yeah.
He ain't a reader.
Yeah.
He ain't a reader. Okay. No. That'll wrap our episode one, covering episodes one and two. Like Luke mentioned, and like we've been talking about, we'll be back weekly. Not sure exactly what our drop schedule will be. This is a part-time gig for us, obviously. So we're not like, it's not going to be like every Tuesday they'll come out. But listen, we're going to be here every week. We hope you like what you heard today. And we'll be back. And we hope you're back. And Benchtown TV is bigger, obviously, than just Percy Jackson. We've mentioned Dave as a name we've just dropped. There are seven of us that do the podcast. So we're covering a lot of shows. I think currently at the moment, it's what? Jack Reacher, Jujutsu Kaisen, Yu Yu Hakusho and Percy Jackson. We just wrapped Beacon 23. We just wrapped Murder at the End of the World. We're just constantly popping out content. So if you're listening to this on, if you're still here, first of all, thank you. I love people that make it to the end. But if you're listening on the Percy Jackson specific feed, which I believe we've set up at this point, if this is out in the world, just make sure you go to the main Bingetown TV feed. That just has every episode that we do there. You'll get a, just a quick scroll and you'll see all the shows that we're covering. And then the best way to look at everything that we've covered, which at this point is insane to say that it's over 100 shows, but BingetownTV.com, the wonders of the internet, has a little page that has every show we've covered in alphabetical order. And you can search through. And I will guarantee you, if you like Percy Jackson, and you liked, like, you know, you're interested in our coverage, you're going to find a show on our website that we've covered that you also enjoy or that you want to watch. So just make sure to check it out if you like this. That's just the best way to support us. That and then liking and subscribing whenever you're listening or watching on, if this makes it onto YouTube, which is undecided. For the first time this season, we are Bingetown TV, and thank you for listening.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.